I can remember a few things about being in the second grade. My teacher was Mrs. Howell, no relation. But I remember every Friday we had a spelling test. Now, I was in the second grade. I mean, we were spelling big words, not dog and cat. We were spelling animal, school, words like that. But there was one word that every child, not only in the second grade, but every child in elementary school was required to learn to spell that year. It was a name. The name was Khrushchev. We all had to learn how to spell the name of Khrushchev because Mr. Khrushchev was the Prime Minister of the Soviet Union. He was the leader of communism. He was our arch enemy. And for some reason, everybody at the school decided it was important for us to learn to spell his name, which I never really did very well. I get confused with those Russian names. But we came to know the name of Khrushchev very well that fall in the third grade when we went through the Cuban Missile Crisis. Because we were so close to Redstone Arsenal, the Army Redstone Arsenal with all of their weapons, that we knew that we would be one of the first targets. I learned about communist countries that had strange names like Czechoslovakia. And when I thought about countries like Czechoslovakia, I have these images, these stereotypical black and white pictures of people with somber faces, with looks of despair, standing in long lines for the necessities of life. I see people for whom life is a burden and there is no joy. And so you can imagine that a few weeks ago when we landed in the Czech Republic, the former Czechoslovakia, I didn't know what to expect. I still had all of those stereotypical black and white images of these somber, desperate people who did not find any joy in life. You know, people told us we were going to the city of Prague. They said Prague is one of the most beautiful European cities, and it truly is. It was one of the few capitals not bombed in the Second World War. It is a gorgeous city. And I expected that, but I thought the only thing we would see would be physical beauty. And the first afternoon when we arrived and I went out exploring in the city, I was absolutely astounded. I was blown away by what I found. Because it was more than just physical beauty. This city was alive. This city was dynamic. It was on fire with the love of life. Everywhere you went, people were happy, people were joyful, there were musicians on every corner. They even had some of those old-fashioned organ grinders. You remember that? They had performers. They had people who were very friendly and engaging. They all speak English, and they were all just as helpful and kind as they could be. And their lives were full of joy, and they were all in color. There was no black and white. And then it occurred to me, this is what is taking place. You see, the majority of these people still remember what it was like to live under the communists. A lot of these people were those somber faces standing in long lines for the necessity of life. They remember what it was like to be oppressed. And now in their newfound freedom, they rejoice. They will never forget as it was before, but they know now that they have freedom and they are determined to enjoy and rejoice in every single day that they live now in the land of the free and the home of the blessed. These people are blessed. But you know, as I went around in a observed all that, I thought, goodness gracious, I've always lived in a free country. I've never known what it was like to be oppressed. And yet, I take that freedom for granted. Because truly, I am blessed. And you are blessed. We're all blessed with this gift of freedom. As Jesus begins the Sermon on the Mount, he begins by telling his disciples and the crowds that had gathered around them, "You are blessed." He didn't say, "You used to be blessed back in the day." He didn't say, "One day you're going to be blessed." He said, "You are blessed." Now I want you to think about something. Think about the disciples. Think about the crowds who gathered around Jesus that day. They were a motley crew, a ragtag gathering of disciples. As one scholar said, this was not a high-class audience. And as Jesus looked around and looked into their faces, he knew that some of them were in mourning. He knew that some of them were hungering and thirsting for righteousness. That there were some who were actually persecuted. There were some who were peacemakers. But regardless of who they were, what their circumstances were, Jesus looked at them and said, "You look at your situation and you say, 'Woe is me.' I look at your situation and say, 'You are blessed.'" Some of you know the name of Dr. Tom Long, who is a professor of preaching at the Candler School of Theology in Atlanta. Dr. Long says the Sermon on the Mount is the constitution of the church, and the Beatitudes are its preamble. We're going to begin tomorrow night and Tuesday a Bible study on the Beatitudes. And I always think about Evelyn Kepley at the beginning of these Bible studies. Evelyn, can you believe it's been almost 25 years since we started the Tuesday morning Bible study down in the parlor? Well, now it's grown. It's truly an ecumenical gathering. It's a community Bible study. We're going to meet for 7 weeks and would love for you to participate. It's a thing that I look forward to every week on Monday night and Tuesday mornings. And we're going to begin to study the preamble to the church's constitution, the Beatitudes. One of my favorite places in Israel, one of the most beautiful, peaceful, tranquil sites that you can ever visit, is the Mount of the Beatitudes, where Jesus uttered these words. And Linda, I bet you thought about that when you were preparing for this, and because Linda's been there, many of you have had the opportunity to go to the Mount of Beatitudes. It's just this beautiful setting. I'll show you some pictures tomorrow night. It's a beautiful setting overlooking the Sea of Galilee, just a gentle sloping hill. There's a gorgeous chapel that the Italians built back in the 1930s out of Italian marble. It's just absolutely gorgeous. But now, if you were listening, when Linda started her reading from the 5th chapter of Matthew, it said Jesus went up on the mountain and called his disciples. He went up on the mountain. Well, when you go there, it's not a mountain, is it? It's just a gentle sloping hill. But Matthew wasn't focused on topography. He knew that it wasn't a mountain. But he was focused on theology. Because Matthew, if there's one gospel that is for the Jewish people, it's the gospel of Matthew. And there is no question the role that Jesus plays in this gospel. Jesus is the new Moses. Jesus is the deliverer of God's people. Jesus is the one who's going to lead them from bondage and slavery through the wilderness to the promised land. And so as Moses went up on the mountain to receive the law, Jesus now goes up on the mountain to redefine the law. And that's why in the Sermon on the Mount, you'll hear Jesus say things like, "You have heard it said of old." Now he's talking about the law. "An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you," he's redefining the law, "if anyone strikes you on the cheek, turn to him the other cheek." You've heard it said of old, the law of Moses, "You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, you shall love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." You see what he's doing? He's turning the law upside down. T.S. Eliot once used the term, "the unknown remembered gate." The unknown remembered gate. Well, if the Sermon on the Mount is the gateway into the gospel, you know, there's a lot of it that we remember. I mean, there are phrases such as, "love your enemies," "blessed are the peacemakers," "Our Father who art in heaven," the Lord's Prayer was in the Sermon on the Mount, "judge not that you be not judged." We recognize all of those phrases. But while we remember that, for some reason, the power, the message, the impact of this tremendous, earth-changing address is lost on us, and we do not realize that these words are revolutionary. And if we would follow the teaching on the Sermon on the Mount, we could turn the world upside down. Jesus is turning everything that we thought was evident on its head. And the message of the Beatitudes is truly revolutionary. You can argue that in the Beatitudes, and we'll talk about this in our study, they describe the purpose of every religious law, the foundation of every Christian custom, the aim of every practice in this new society of faith that we call the church. It becomes apparent that this is not the world the disciples thought was so evident, because we live in a world, and they lived in a world, that glorified the self-sufficient, the aggressive, the power brokers, the assertive. They're the ones who end up number one. And Jesus said to them, "The people whom the world sees as pitiful, the meek, the mournful, the poor in spirit, the persecuted, these are the ones who are truly blessed. These are Jesus' favorite people." Now, there's something about the Beatitudes that I think it is very important for us to understand. Jesus is not setting up conditions of blessing. He's not saying, "Okay, now, Paul, when you become poor in spirit, you're going to be blessed." That's not what he's saying. He's not saying, "Now you wait until you start mourning, and then you're going to be blessed." That's not what he's doing here. But rather what he's doing is he's stating a fact. He's looking around at that motley crew of disciples, and he knows where they are. He knows that one is mourning. He knows the one who is poor in spirit and the one who is not. Many of you recognize the name of Dr. Stanley Hauerwas of Duke Divinity School. When his father died, he preached his father's funeral and he preached on the Beatitudes. And this is one of the things he said. "Too often those characteristics, the ones we find in the Beatitudes, are turned into ideals that we strive to attain. Well, as ideals, they can become formulas for power rather than descriptions of the kind of people characteristic of this new age that Christ ushers in." Thus, Jesus is not telling us you have to become poor in spirit or meek. He simply says that many who are called into the kingdom will find themselves so constituted. Now, those of you in my generation, remember a man who was once called the most trusted man in America. Remember Walter Cronkite? Young people, Walter Cronkite was a news anchor. Back in the day when we didn't have CNN or Fox or any of that, it was just three networks, and he was the CBS evening news commentator. Everybody trusted him so much they called him Uncle Walter. Remember? And you remember in 1968, Uncle Walter went to Vietnam, and he announced, "We're never going to win this war. This is sort of a hopeless situation." And Lyndon Johnson reportedly said, "If I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've lost the nation." Well, he was that trusted, that respected. Remember how he closed every broadcast? "And that's the way it is. And that's the way it is. September the 21st. That's the way it is." When Jesus looked out at his disciples, he was simply saying, "And that's the way it is. I've got some guys who are poor in spirit, but there are others who are not." Maybe when he said, "Blessed are the meek," he looked at Simon Peter, because Simon Peter was anything but meek. But something tells me Thaddeus may have been meek. You ever wonder why we never hear a word about Thaddeus? Maybe it's because he was meek. When Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart," maybe he looked at Judas, because he knew that Judas was not pure in heart. But something tells me John was. He had one or two disciples who were peacemakers. He obviously had some, including Simon Peter, who were not. But you know, when you put it all together, you have this wonderful listing that we call the Beatitudes, found at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, and it tells us something about the church. Because we're not all poor in spirit. We're not all meek. Not all of you are mourning. Not all of you are peacemakers. But some are. And so this morning, in a few minutes, as we try one more time on this standing in rows for the doxology, look at it this way. Maybe the first group that stands will be the poor in spirit. Maybe the next group that stands will be the meek. One group that stands will be the peacemakers. And on and on and on. And you put it together, and you have the church. Now, there's one thing that I didn't mention. Linda and I were talking about, do you say blessed or blessed are? And Linda made a great observation. She said, "Blessed sounds a lot more southern." I think that's right. But what exactly does that mean? I mean, when Jesus said, "You're blessed," what is he talking about? Well, you'll notice if you look at different translations, and that's a great way to study the Bible, to compare translations, that it's obvious that Greek word is difficult to translate into English. Because if any of you have the Good News Bible, the TEV, you know what it says? Happy. Happy are those who are persecuted. And you go, whoa, 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 wait a minute. But you see, Jesus is talking about something more than happiness. I don't think that's the best translation. Some say fortunate. Some say rejoice if you are. But there's a word, most translations say blessed or blessed. But there's a word that I think we've left out that may be the one we need to use. Congratulations. Congratulations. If you are the poor in spirit. Congratulations. Because you notice, that every beatitude comes with a promise. Jesus looks at them and said, this is where you are now, but congratulations, because yours is the kingdom of heaven, because you will see God, because you will be comforted. It is the promise of what we are becoming. There was a medical doctor back in Roxburgh named Dr. Donald Bradshaw. I saw Evelyn Bingham before the service, and Evelyn says she remembers Donald Bradshaw. In fact, if you ever met this guy, you'll never forget him, because Evelyn, he was a character, was he not? But Dr. Bradshaw had a sister, and her sister was married to a theological professor who taught at Union Theological Seminary in New York City. I mean, that's heavyweight stuff. And when they retired, or he retired, they moved back to Roxburgh. Now, he went to the Episcopal Church, but every now and then he'd show up at the Baptist Church, and when he did, I sweated bullets. I'm thinking, boy, there's a Union professor back there. I know he's going to critique this sermon. But one day, Dr. Bradshaw called me and said, I don't know if you've heard about my sister, but she's terminally ill. I forget exactly what the illness was. But he said, she's over at Duke Hospital. Would you mind going over to see her one day? And I said, I'd be glad to. I'll never forget this. I walk into her room, not knowing what to expect. But immediately when I walked in the door and introduced myself, she had that joyous, vivacious, outgoing personality. You could tell she was kin to her brother. And she looked at me and she said, Dr. Howell, I'm so honored that you came to see me. And I said, well, I'm happy to be here, but now I'm not a doctor. I said, I haven't finished my degree. I haven't received my diploma. I'm not a doctor yet. You know what she told me? She said, but you will be. She said, that's what you're becoming. And she said, because I'm not going to be around to see it, she said, I'm going to bestow that degree on you right now. And she said, by the power invested in me by this hospital bed and my suffering, I confer on you the degree. You're now Dr. Howell. I want to tell you something. A few months later, when I walked across the platform and got a piece of paper, it didn't mean nearly as much as it did that day. So Jesus looks at us, regardless of where you are, if you're sick, if you're mournful, if you've been persecuted, if life is not going the way it's supposed to do, and he says, congratulations. Congratulations! You are blessed, because here's the promise. This is what you are becoming. Thanks be to God. Let us pray. Help us to understand, O God, that we're truly blessed. And as we begin to study these words, we pray that you would reveal to us the promise of what we shall become in and through Jesus Christ. Amen.